Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's broadcast of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and so glad that you've joined us today. We have been doing this for about 5 years now, and so excited that we've entered into our fifth year. We have several shows that you should be interested in. On Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time is Parenting Aces with Lisa Goodman Stone out of Atlanta, Georgia. Wednesday, before my show comes on the air, we have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. Chuck broadcasts out of the Citadel in South Carolina. Then we've got on my show, and then Thursday's show is the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association Perspective, which is hosted by John Denise. And we hope that you'd be able to podcast those shows, any of those shows, on iTunes or the Blog Talk Radio site. So on to the tennis. Today, bring you a little bit of information. First and foremost, we've got the new D3 rankings that are out and a little bit of changes, but not many. Top five women: Williams, Emery, Amherst at number 3, Claremont Mud Scripps at 4, Washington Lee at 5, Johns Hopkins University at 6, and I added number 6 in there because we had Coach Willenborg on a couple of weeks ago, and he's made a move up, and we're excited to hear that. On the men's side, Claremont Mud Scripps, the 3 teams for 1, heads the number 1 ranking, number 2 Emory, number 3 Pomona Pitzer, number 4 Amherst, and number 5 Washington University at St. Louis. So this will be the last ranking before the D3 National Tournament, which happens in May. And want to let you know about another tournament that's about to start, which is the NCAA Division I tournament. And they have released all 64 teams that are participating in this tournament. You can find that on the NCAA.com website. They have the brackets published there. For those of you that aren't familiar with it, the top 16 seeds are guaranteed to host, and a matchup between conference opponents will be avoided in the first 2 rounds of the championships. They have several conference winners that automatically qualify. First and second round competition takes place May 8th through the 9th. The teams will play a single elimination format. Then the winner of each side advances to the Heard Tennis Center in Waco, Texas, where 16 teams will compete in the national championship May 14th through the 19th. This event is hosted by Baylor University right here in Waco, Texas. What's interesting about this is if you recall, many times through the year we've discussed the scoring format changes that have been made, that have been retracted, and just want to remind you that this tournament matches, they'll play 3 8-game pro set doubles played for 1 point, followed by 6 singles matches, each valued at 1 team point, played in the best 3 of sets. Which is good to hear. We are conservative in our approach here to tennis and like to play the 8-game pro set for the doubles point, and also like the 2 out of 3 sets for the singles. This just gives more for the player experience, which is what we need to be considered. The fans will be there, but the player experience is what this event is about, and we're excited that the NCAA has changed its course and is now going with the usual dual match format, first 1 to 4. Also want to drop a line in about the NJCAA National Tournament. This tournament is a tournament I was in many, many, many times. The women's tournament will begin May 2nd and accumulate May 8th. The men's tournament will begin May 9th to the 15th, so you can tell that we've started into enter into championship season, and we're excited about that. This has been a culmination of a lot of matches that have been played, and finally glad to see these teams be able to put it out there and see who the national champion is. So want to let you know that today's guest on the show comes to us from Lynn University. Lynn is one of the top D2 programs in the country. Today's guest is Mike Perez. Mike is the head coach of the men's and the women's teams there. He's been there for 26 seasons. He's got 7 national titles, 68 All-Americans on the men, 102 All-Americans on the women. He has over 900 career wins with a winning percentage of about 79.4%. And looking at his roster and schedule this year, he attained that. Let me see if I can bring him in here. Hello, Mike, are you there?
Jason, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad to have you on the show. I hope I did you justice with that introduction.
Of course. Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, you've been very successful there at Lynn, but you weren't always a D2 program. You started out as an NAI program when you first got there. It didn't take long for you to win at the D2 program. So what's the big difference between an NAI and a D2 program, Mike?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously there's some different requirements and different stipulations and eligibility requirements, as you know. It's in the early days, the NAIA days, I think there was more of an age issue where people would sit out a couple of years and then come back into the tennis world and decide to go to college. That changed as we went into D2. And for those couple of years that we were still NAIA and couldn't compete for the Division II national championships, we still had to recruit under the D2 rules. So most of those young ladies and gentlemen that we had from about 94 to 96 until 97 when we were able to compete, we're still recruited under Division II rules.
I think one of the biggest things I enjoyed about reading up about you was you were the guy that destroyed BYU Hawaii's 103-match winning streak.
Well, you know, that wasn't me. That was our players. But, Coach Porter has done an amazing job over at BYU Hawaii. And we've had a really, you know, if you look through the NAIA National Champions and the Division II Champions, there's really been 3 programs that have dominated on the women's side, and that's been Armstrong, Lynn, and BYU Hawaii. And, there's a reason for that. Coach Earnshaw at Armstrong did a tremendous job, who's now at NC State, and Dave Porter, obviously the past USBTA president, and numerous national champions at BYU. So it's been really enjoyable to compete against them. I just wish Armstrong wasn't so good over the last 10 years.
It's good to have the competition, Mike. Now, before we talk too much about your tennis team, let's talk about your school there, Lynn University. Where are you located?
We're located in beautiful Boca Raton, Florida, which is about 25 miles from in between West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale, and about 45 minutes to Miami. So it's a wonderful location right on the ocean. And our university has hosted the presidential debate in 2012. Which was the high point for us since I've been here for 25 years. That was a very exciting time. But we've grown from the beginning in 1989 when I started with about 500 students up to approximately 2,300 now. And we have a tremendous, very exciting program with Apple, pairing with Apple with our iPad. We have no books on campus. Everything is done through the iPad. And, the technology and the way that we do our programs is certainly unique.
Well, that's a good mention there, and it's got to be easy to keep a notebook there on the Lynn campus. Your degrees there on the university campus, which degrees do you highlight on your recruiting visits, Mike?
You know, obviously our international business school, you know, being in Boca Raton, we have the good fortune to have so many CEOs in this area. So the opportunity to mix with people that have run multinational corporations that come in and guest lecture, We do some long distance lecturing via streaming and things like that. So the opportunity to do some real we have a lot of internships that are required of our undergraduates. So they get the opportunity to work in business and to get out of the classroom and do some real life learning. So our International Business School is probably our strongest. I'm sorry to cut you off there.
No. Go ahead, Mike.
And then we have, the traditional biology, chemistry majors. We're a liberal arts college. We have a wonderful conservatory of music where they're a representative of the university, just like the athletic programs. And we have some tremendous musicians that have gone on and played in the London Symphonic all over the world. So we have a unique variety of majors, and 25% of our population is international. So that makes for a really fun environment.
Yeah. Now tell us about your facilities on campus, Mike.
Well, I'm sitting here watching our men's practice as my assistant coach is just doing some serves and returns. But we built the Perper Tennis Complex 4 years ago with all fundraised money. We have six courts with seat backs in the middle, which is unusual because most college facilities have their seating on the outside of the courts. But we have three on the east side, three on the west side. We have an LED scoreboard, electronic scoreboard. We have Musco lighting that I can turn on and off with my iPhone. I've been at the movies with my daughter, and kids want to hit some balls at 8 o'clock at night. I get a text. I go onto my phone. I turn on the lights, and then I turn them off when they're done. So we've provided a really nice venue for our kids to work out.
Yeah, I would say so. That's got to be a helpful feature on the phone, Mike.
It is. It is. After, Coach, after 26 years, you can't be there all the time.
That's for sure. Now, Lynn plays in the Sunshine State Conference. That's got to be one of the toughest conferences in all of tennis.
We love D2 and we love being in D2, but that's the only rub there is that you can be number four in the country and not go to the final 16 at nationals. And that's because Division II has done regionalization. So only two teams from each region go to the final 16. So you may have two teams in the Midwest that might be ranked 16 or 20 in the nation or 25, and they're going. But like ourselves, in the past couple of years, we've had to play the number one team in the country to get out of our region when we're ranked number four. So it's, but I tell our kids life is not fair, and you got to do what you got to do, and that's the way it's set up, and we live with it. But, yeah, the Sunshine State Conference has some tremendous teams. I think three or four of the top 16 in the country on the women's side are in our region, in our conference, and three of the top six on the men's side as well. So it's not easy week in and week out.
Now, when you look at your schedule, you play a lot of nationally ranked programs. Is that by design, Mike?
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to be the best, it's cliche, but it's true. All cliches are true. If you want to be the best, you got to play the best. And you don't know what you're made of until you go up there and you play the number one teams in the country every year. And you have to deserve it. And we don't shy from anybody, and I guess that's the winning percentage. If I knew that all these wins would make such a big difference, I wouldn't be playing all these teams that are top five in the country. But and we also don't play the full allotment of scheduling, but, you got to play the best to be the best, and that's just the reality.
Now, you use a lot of interdivisional play, Mike. Is that crucial for your program?
I think so, because, in the old days, I say the old days, but in the 90s, a lot of people didn't know who we were. So, we've beaten University of Virginia women when they were ranked 15 in the country back in the mid-90s. We've beaten Harvard. We've beaten Yale. There's a lot of wins in our history against top D1s, but those things kind of ended about 5, 6, 7 years ago when, we don't even play FAU, which is a Division I team that's 2 miles away from us. So a lot of the D1 teams really don't want to mess with the top five teams in D2. You've been around the business. We believe that the top five, top six teams in D2 are stronger than 70% of D1. I mean, there's only so many players to go around. And, it's obviously D1 is much deeper, but, those top five, six teams in the country can really compete with anybody, as shown in the ITA regionals when we go to New York and, we've had a doubles team beat Pepperdine after they just won the national title in 2006. We've had numerous players that have stepped up there. Embry Riddle, a couple of years ago, beat UCLA first round. So there's been a long history of D2 schools and NAIA schools going to the big stage and beating the biggest schools in the country.
Yeah, now through the years, that interdivisional play has shrunk. I can remember when I was at Lee that we had a hard time playing D1s as well. Do you think that's an athletic director move or a tennis coach's move, Mike?
Well, you want to hope that it's an athletic director's call. But, you know, it's probably a combination of both. But, you know, Coach, you never can underestimate a guy's ego. And, you know, if you're sitting at, I'll just throw out a school. If you're sitting at Oklahoma State and you lose to Oklahoma Baptist, that doesn't make you feel so good when you're going down the street in your town, you know. So I think that's a lot has played into it.
I can remember that it was always fun for our kids to go to a Division I program and compete to show those Division I's that that interdivisionally there are teams out there that they should be concerned about.
Yeah, you know, tennis is a different sport. It's just like boxing. I mean, you know, there's tremendous world-class tennis players out there that don't always believe that bigger is better. And the facilities at Lynn, and obviously we feel like we have one of the nicest in Division II in the nation. But, you know, the campuses is a different environment. We're not getting them up at 6 o'clock in the morning and going to run 5 miles out in the forest. There's a little bit more balance there. And so high-quality tennis players, you know, we're recruiting against University of Miami. We're recruiting against Auburn. You know, the kids that we're recruiting are the same ones that are looking at the big schools and the major conferences. So, you know, if they say no, they say no. But you're not going to get the best if you don't go after them.
Yeah, that was one of the selling points we had, Mike. I mean, these kids, some of these kids are going to go just sit around at a D1 school and not get to play. But maybe not necessarily in your case, but a lot of these kids are great players that just decided, I want to go play for a national championship.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And then if you even look at it realistically, these are the conversations. We just lost a young lady to a school in the Midwest, or actually the Far West, that has no chance of ever winning a national championship. But, you know, she just wants, and the team was not at the level of ours. But she just felt, you know, the D1, D2 mentality. And that's okay, because we want people that want to be at Lynn. And we've been able to survive and be able to thrive with the tremendous student athletes that we've had the good fortune to have. But, you know, we worry about what we do here at D2, and we can't control what happens except when we meet them on the court on those rare occasions.
Hey, Mike, does your team play a fall schedule?
We do. We play, of course, the ITA regionals, and then we always play the traditional Barner, a long-standing tournament at beautiful Rollins College up in Winter Park, Florida. And then if we have the good fortune of winning that ITA regional, we go on to the small college championships. And then if you win that Super Bowl, you go on to play the top 31 teams and 31 players in Division I at the National Tennis Center in New York. So that's pretty much our fall schedule, and then we shut it down in November.
Now, that's something that I never got to do, was go to New York to play up there with the big guns, Mike. How big a tournament is that for D2, that small college championship, to get these kids in there?
Well, it's just a lot of fun, first of all. I mean, you get treated very well. Obviously, you know the difference between D1 and D2 right there. But you get the opportunity to play the top schools. This year, we've had the good fortune to have the number one girl in the country the last 2 years, and she qualified both years as the number one player in small colleges to go to New York. And she beat Vanderbilt's number one her first round last year. And then this year, our doubles team from Barry University went on to beat Notre Dame their first round. So it's always enjoyable. But, you know, tennis is tennis. It's the same size court, same ball, and a little different from us from Florida being indoors. But we really look forward to it, and it's a lot of fun.
Mike, any chance we'll ever see at the end of the year an ITA super championship where we get all these divisions together and let them play it out?
I don't think that's going to happen in at least my college coaching career. You know, there's only so much time that a student athlete has to study, to play these events, and Division I still has those individual national championships at the end of the year. So I just don't even think there's enough time on the schedule, but I would like to see a little more interdivision play during the regular season, where it's not going to count against those D1 so much if they drop a match, especially, you know, local teams where we can have some rivalries, just like FAU and ourselves, or University of Miami and Barry, Rollins, or University of Central Florida. You know, we get calls all the time to play scrimmages, but You know, I like to play for the real thing. I like to play for the real
thing. Yeah, those scrimmages don't amount to much at all. Yeah. Now, Mike, you just got back from your conference championship. Is that correct?
We did. Our men made it to the finals, defeated St. Leo, was ranked number 4 in the country, I believe. Defeated them in the semis, and then went on to play Barry, who's undefeated at this point. I think they're number 2 in the country, 1 or 2, who had beat Armstrong early in the year, and we got down 4-0, lost 3 doubles, lost a singles match quick, and then won the next 4 singles matches. So we're sitting at 4-4, and had a young freshman against a senior on Barry's side, and he was a very fine player, and it just didn't go our way, but come a long way, and to go 5-4 with such a tremendous Barry team gives us a lot of confidence going into NCAA regionals this weekend.
Yeah, and Barry being in the conference, that helps get ready for nationals, I'm sure.
Absolutely, it sure does.
Now, I noticed that you are practicing today after the conference tournament, so do you know yet if you're going to be able to attend that D2 championship?
We do. They just did the selections last night. As a matter of fact, we had our athletic award show, our student-athlete award show, and during the show they were watching their individual phones, their smartphones on the NCAA selection, and we leave Friday to go to West Florida. We play Rollins College first round, and then the winner will play University of West Florida to make it to the final 16. So we look forward to the trip to Pensacola, and whatever happens, happens. We're going to let it fly.
West Florida, Derek, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the women as well will travel to West Florida that weekend, Nova first round, and then which is from our conference, and then West Florida to make it to the final 16. So
Florida traditionally a sub school out.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but Derek has done an amazing job at West Florida. And, we just look forward to going back there. Derek and Lynn and College of Boca Raton prior to that have had a long history, so we look forward to it.
Yeah. Now, as you travel with your teams, you know, when you look at your roster there, there are quite a few internationals. Do you get any flack at Mike?
You know, we do, you know, and then I tell them about the 5 American kids or the 5 Florida kids that went on to play at Arkansas or go on to Memphis that I offered scholarships to. But, you know, our number one player is Danny Riggs, Bobby Riggs' grandson, and he's had an amazing year. He beat 3 players in the top 5 in the nation. He's ranked number 12 and should move up very quickly in the rankings. So, you know, our first NCAA championship with the women in 97, 4 out of the 6 girls were from Boca Raton, Florida. But, you know, as I said 23 years ago at a coach's meeting, and people were complaining about all the internationals, all the foreigners playing college tennis here. And I, you know, mentioned to them that the first Native American Indian that I see that can play great tennis, I'll be the first one to recruit him, because all of us have come from someplace else. And and that's the way I try to look at it. You know, players that I've coached 22 years ago, 23 years ago, are now from other countries, are now living in the United States and living the American dream and having families and moving into the fabric of the United States. So, you know, I push back a little bit, but, you know, there's always going to be xenophobia out there.
Yeah, and that's good to hear that your kids are staying. I mean, it's got to be an easy sell living on the beach there in Florida, but these kids get used to that and they want to stay around. That's a compliment to you and your program.
Well, you know, we say that all the time. They go, oh, it must be so easy to recruit at Lynn. I'm like, well, FAU is closer to the beach than us, and they're not in the top 50 in Division I. But, you know, I mean, of course, I mean, listen, if Lynn University wasn't such a fantastic institution, progressive, on the cutting edge of education, we wouldn't be able to keep these students, have such high graduation rates. And the donors that have been so generous over the years here at Lynn has made this place very special. And it is certainly it certainly makes it a lot easier when you get a kid on campus.
And when you look back on that spring schedule, what were some of the tough matches that you encountered?
Boy, you know, every year when we play Auburn Montgomery, the tremendous powerhouse from NAIA, Georgia Gwinnett that had 3 players that were top 500 or ATP, top 500-600 ATP. I mean, they were a great team. We played the Junior College National Champions, ASA, AFA. That was a lot of fun. But, you know, getting through your conference, playing Barry, I mean, there's so many great teams that come down here. You know, it's just week in, week out, and we just enjoy the competition. But, you know, those matches with Auburn Montgomery, Embry-Riddle, and Barry certainly stand out.
That ASA team's pretty tough, huh, Mike?
They are, and that was a nice win for us. But, yeah, they're pretty tough. A little bit different vibe than we're used to. But, you know, college tennis is just like you mentioned with the I heard you prior in your opening, the change of format and those kind of things. And tennis is, they're really encouraging people to be more vocal. And I always don't mind the fans being vocal, but when the players get a little crazy that, you know, you mentioned that you're a little bit of a traditionalist, and I've been doing this as long as you have, and, you know, we miss those days where they used to play two out of three sets for double.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a different world, and they're trying to make things more exciting, and you got to adapt.
No, Mike, with all these scoring changes that were talked about at Division I, anything talked about at Division II?
You know, they really haven't discussed that. You know, when we were in New York this fall, the USCA came out, and the real thing behind it is just to make it television friendly. And there's a lot of time to fill on those conferences that have those contracts, the big conferences, and they want to keep it under 3 hours. So they're doing everything possible to do that. Now, and in conjunction with trying to have some of these top American kids go to college and mature a little bit before going out on the tour and ruining their eligibility. So, but the problem is that's not the way that tennis is scored out in the world. So are you really preparing these top juniors for a preparation on the tour other than that maturation period of being away from home and going to class and those kind of things? So it's a little bit of a quandary, but, you know, that's for people with a higher pay grade to decide.
Oh, that's for sure. Mike, I'm curious, being there in Florida, do you get a lot of help from the academies over there?
You know, I'm a little bit unique in the way that I try to stay away from academy kids. You know, again, just a personal philosophy. I like people that play and compete more than just train. I think the academy system is gone a little bit of amok over the years. I mean, we always joke in Boca Raton, you throw a rock, you could hit a tennis pro. So, you know, you got 10 academies probably within 5 miles here. And, you know, of course we always look at players, but, you know, I would be negligent if I didn't do that. But we like people that are actually out there competing ITFs, competing in the Florida juniors, you know, competing and playing matches. That's the real sense I get of how a player is, other than can they hit a forehand and backhand 500 times in a perfect strike zone being fed out of a basket. So, you know, our recruiting is a little bit different than just recruiting from these academies.
Yeah, so take me into that recruiting. Do you use recruiting services, or have you made contacts through the years that this helps out with?
You know, I think you got to throw everything on the wall. So, you know, I think you got to do everything out there possible. Contacts are the best. Your best recruiting people are your alumni base, people that have played there, know what kind of coach you are, know what kind of university it is, and know if that's going to be a good fit. So I think that's the number one place that we look to is our alums. That's the number one thing. Number two is the contacts that I've had the good fortune over the years, all the great coaches that I've been able to work with over the years here in Boca Raton, Florida. It's an international area. And so we've been able to make contacts, and that's really where we start. And then you have the services. You know, you get a bevy of emails, you know, as a coach, and you have to pick and choose, but I'm not a big video guy. So, you know, I think video can only hurt you, not really help you. So
you
there's nothing.
That, Mike, why would a video hurt in your situation? I mean, you get kids from all over the world, and you get, I guess, videos first, but you can't go see them all. So how would that hurt them in your situation?
Well, because, you know, let me give you an example. First of all, we get a young man, we look him up in the rankings. What have they done? Okay, so you might see that they're 600 ITF and they played these events. And then you get a video and, you know, it just, it's not very realistic. You can look at technique and things like that. We flew a young lady in from, and of course, if you're interested in someone, you fly them in for a recruiting visit.
Yeah.
You know, we're funded pretty well here at Lynn University. So we saw a young lady from, I believe it was Denmark or Norway, and she looked amazing. It was the best video I ever saw. great footwork, everything that I look for, that I like in a player. We got her here, a wonderful girl. The ball didn't come off her racket. There was nothing on the ball. And, you know, the technique was good and everything, but she just wasn't the kind of player that would be successful here at Lynn. And so, you know, it was the best video I really saw of someone that didn't have super high ranking. And I thought, wow, I'm going to really get away with something here. But, you know, she showed up. And then oppositely, you get people that look really terrible on video, no, slow feet and things like that, and they don't miss the next 50 ball. So, you know, tennis is an unusual sport. There's no – what I try to tell people, there's no style points in tennis. It's about who wins more points.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. You don't get 2 points for looking pretty. It's still only 1 point. So, you know, there's people, that, as Brad Gilbert say, there's winning ugly, you know, and you want people that can compete and win matches.
Mike, with all these years of experience, you've bound to been looking at American tennis a little bit as you go along through this with the kids you get there in Florida. Are the academies part of the problem or the solution?
In my humble opinion, it's great to get more people out on the tennis court. That's always fantastic, as I'm sure you're preaching the same thing.
Yes,
sir. The problem is that there's just too much unrealistic practicing that is going on, that they're not doing real life stuff. And they're not giving they're afraid for these kids to really go out there and compete and put it on the line. So I think there's a little bit too much training and not enough competing. But the academies, you know, they're there to make money. And it's a huge dynamic shift when someone's been paying their pro, right? Where the incentive is to keep that person taking lessons from you, instead of coming to a university where you get a kid and you got to change things in 2 weeks. I mean, if I had a dime for every time I told a player you should have a class action lawsuit against your pro, I mean, you know, it's just, it's crazy, you know? So,
I agree.
It's a different world out there. Do I think, you know, in a simple answer, you know, I don't think the academies, let's just say this, my daughter's a soccer player. If she was a tennis player, she would only be going to academies to play sets.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that makes sense. You know, and American tennis is in it's in a funk. We've got mediocre men, we've got mediocre women. Everybody seems to be thinking that their kid needs to go to an academy to become a better tennis player, and yet we're not seeing things happen on a national level that say you need to go to an academy.
Well, let's look at the individuals that have been successful as American tennis players. The Williams sisters, right? Probably our most decorated American players in the last 15 years. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir, I would.
Okay. How did they come up? Did they come up in the academy system? Absolutely
not.
No,
not at all.
Exactly. Even when they were here in Palm Beach Gardens, we had guys that would go over there and play sets with them. So, you know, until they became famous and started getting those wild cards, then the USTA became involved. But, you know, so let's look at Melanie Hodan, the young lady that's been injured and all those other things. She didn't come up through the academy system. You know, she had a private coach that she was comfortable with and had some success. You know, on the med side, you know, you have guys like, well, Jesse Levine's from Canada but trained here in the U.S. He wasn't an academy guy. You know, I can go on and on and on. A good friend of ours, Ricardas Berankis, from Lithuania, who's the top 100, was number one in the world junior. He didn't come up through an academy system. So, you know, I think we need to really take a step back. And, you know, the USTA structure, I've always believed this. The USTA has always believed that you had to be a great player to be a coach, right? So you have all these ex-players that used to be 200, 300 in the world, 50 in the world, 70 in the world. If that was the case, then Babe Ruth would have been the greatest manager of all time. if that was the case, Michael Jordan would be the greatest basketball coach of all time. Bjorn Borg would be the greatest tennis coach of all time, right?
Right, right.
The greatest players don't always necessarily make the great coaches. And in tennis, you've seen it and I've seen it. People win in spite of their coaches sometimes just because they feel good and they're comfortable with that coach. And I think that has been lost with the USTA. I think that's been lost. They think that you could just make a player. And you can't make a player. A player makes themselves. That's my belief.
Oh, I agree with that. When you look back at McEnroe, when you look back at Sampras, you look and Agassi's the academy guy. But when you look at the others out there, these were individuals that decided that they were going to be the best pro tennis players on the planet. These weren't people that went through the academy to find out if they were the best player at the academy.
And then even in the early days, I agree with you. And even in the early days of the Bolotari Academy, it wasn't really an academy model. There was a lot of guys that would go there and train for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And they had a unique, everyone had a different style there at the time. You had Currier, you had Agassi, you had all variety there. So it wasn't like they were just cookie-cuttering players. And, Bolotari, I coached his daughter many, many years ago, and, you know, it's just not a cookie-cutter thing where you're seeing today everybody's just looking at the pros on video and they're saying, this is what you got to do. You got to hit flat. You know, you got to be hitting bombs from everywhere. And, things are going to go full circle. And if the USTA, which I know they're trying as hard as they can, and I think that next cycle of American kids, the next cycle of American stars, they're going to be going back to a more attack style, more serve and volley kind of game because everything goes full circle.
Right. Mike, just let me ask you, are you a supporter of the ROG program to make national champions?
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that I know they're building a wonderful center up there in Orlando now. I think it's fantastic. The more you can get these guys together from around the country and have them compete, I think that's the best. Again, but you want a player to be themselves, and you don't want to change someone's personality. You know, I think oftentimes they get into a coach's hands and they try to make them into something that maybe they're not.
So it sounds like if you're going to come to Lynn, you better not be an academy kid all that much.
Listen, we're non-discriminatory. Like I said, we go after everybody, and we just try to narrow it down and find the best. So that's all we're trying to do here. There's good academies out here. I mean, listen, I got my start working for Vitas Gerulaitis at his tennis academy, and there were some basics that every instructor there had to go through. And, you know, of course, that came from the legendary Harry Hotman style, where he was at Port Washington and things like that. So that's a pretty good system. But, you know, every academy has their own style and their own system. But, you know, I think any time that their number one goal is for a profit, I think kind of ruins the soup, as they said. Kind of spoils
now,
the soup a little bit.
Mike, do you believe that we're close to getting out of our funk as American professional tennis players?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, what are your feelings on that? I'll answer after you do. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Well,
my
thought on it, and you hit upon it, I don't think that I like the academy situation for collegiate players. I'm not a big academy system for professional players. I think that it just goes back to the old model. We had a bunch of rebels and people that didn't they just didn't go to all these special academies and stuff. They, like you said, they kept their private coach. They went after the best tournaments they could play in. They competed hard, and they traveled to play. I just don't see a lot of that anymore.
Yeah, I think there's a big fear of many of these large academies of putting a kid out there and really testing what they've been training for 2 months. I mean,
some
of these academies, these kids train for 2 or 3 months. They don't play any tournaments. I go, what are you talking about? This is crazy. What are you doing? I mean, you've got to be playing. You've got to be playing for something that counts, not just set where it doesn't count for anything. So I think there's got to be something on the line to find the medal of a tennis player. Tennis is boxing without contact. And a boxer just doesn't train for three, you know. It is. It's the same exact thing. And so the person is just training. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. So, you know, I just don't understand, you know, training for 2-3 months without any competition is just, it's bizarre to me.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine tell me that tennis is hand-to-hand combat, but you're 60 feet away from each other. You're just throwing blows back and forth at each other, making eye-to-eye contact the whole time.
Absolutely. It's who feels like, you know, our basic philosophy here, and it's very simple. You have to feel like you deserve it, subconsciously. If we're running sprints and you don't touch the line or you're cutting the corners on laps or, you know, not doing 50 abs instead of 75 abs each day, when it's 6-6 in the third set, it's going to show itself subconsciously. You might get lucky once in a while, but ultimately, you have to know that you've done the work and you deserve to win. Yeah. And that person across the net has to feel that from you, that no matter what's happening here, you're not going to lose. And if you do, you're going to give them everything you got. So, you know, that's our basic philosophy, is that every day, it's almost like a mantra. It's almost like a meditation. Every day you're doing your work, you're doing your business, and doing as hard as you can, because ultimately that's all you can do to give yourself a chance.
Mike, before we get back to Lynn, do you believe that in the course of time that in the course of time that a person at the professional level, let me rephrase it. Do you think that a professional tennis player is coming? I mean, we don't have a true American player. I mean, are we getting the best athletes out there, or are we losing wars to other sports?
You know, I think there's so many factors that come into play. But, you know, let me give you this. I think if the 200th player in the world could actually make money and make a good living, I think that would go a long way. You know, I think there's a lot of guys that you know, could be 300, 400 in the world, and they say, well, why do I do that? So I can lose $75,000 a year, you know, and lose money. So it just, if you look at these other sports, the 400th best baseball player in the world is probably making $4 million a year. The 400th best soccer player in the world, the number 400 soccer player is making $5 million, $10 million a year. But the 300th golfer is making $500,000 a year. But the 400th tennis player is losing money. So yeah. I think if that structure changes, you might get more athletes that decide, oh, maybe tennis is a viable thing for me. I'm 6'4". I'm super fast. A lot better than banging heads and getting concussions. But, you know, there's some pretty great juniors out there. You know, you got Taylor Fritz is having a great year out of California. You know, he's got a lot of skills. And, you know, there's always good Americans coming up. The problem is they just don't turn the corner. You know, I'm hoping that Donald Young is going to do that over these next couple months. He's having a good year. But, you know, you're hoping that they turn the corner. It just doesn't seem to be happening. And you know what? Tennis and life is really mirrors itself. So I think, you know, America is almost in this little bit of a funk. And I think it's showing itself in the tennis world, because it's an individual sport and really a mirror of what's going on around them. So, you know, I think as America maybe, you know, changes the where we are as a people, maybe we'll find some individuals that find that tennis is attractive and they feel more confident in themselves and they feel more positive, and things might happen. I don't know.
I'm like you. I don't know the correct answer to this. I just know that we're not performing as we did when we grew up with all the Americans in the national rankings, international rankings and such. So,
well, you know, the great coaches, there's no more great coaches around. You know, those Harry Hopman guys, you know, Billy Martin, thank God, is still at UCLA. But, you know, you have all these great coaches that are now getting older and are not around anymore. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get all that information from Matt Mitchell and Vitas Gerulaitis and all those guys that played in the 70s and the 80s and had that Harry Hopman school. But, you know, the coaching is different now. And, you know, it's they want quick results. They want people hitting big. They want people hitting flat. The idea, I mean, when was the last, what coach, let me ask you this, what coach can go out there and really teach serve and volley, chip and charge tennis? A young guy under 35 years old today. Do you know anybody?
Yeah.
Right?
Gosh.
So how are you ever going to beat Nadal? Yeah. Way back? Right?
Yeah.
How are you ever going to beat Nadal? How are you going to be able to beat these guys from the baseline? So I just, it doesn't make sense to me.
It was the American way years ago, that it was a chip and charge attack, or it was a serve and volley attack, and we've just gone completely away from that. It's like we don't know how to volley anymore.
Because no one could teach it. That's, I spend, when, even forget about the European, I spend my first month just teaching these young men and women how to volley correctly.
Wow.
You know, it's just because they all just get fed balls out of these baskets, make them feel good with the ball sitting right there, and they hit 10 bombs at the line. They go, oh, well, that's all I need, right?
Yeah.
And if they start missing it, they're like, oh, I just need more practice, and then I'll start hitting the line. You know, where they throw out physics and the you know, science and math, they don't want to think about. There's a thing called gravity. There's a thing called geometry. But, you know, it's a difficult task. But everything's going to go first circle. Like I said, I mean, you see the people that are beating Nadal and some of these baseliners, they're starting to come in more. They're taking the ball early.
They are.
Attacking.
They you are. I've noticed that change in the last 6 months on the Pro Tour. There seems to be a lot more volleying going on.
I mean, why are you going to stay back and try to hit more balls than Nadal or Frère or Gasquet? I mean, you know, those guys are just monsters. They're not going to miss. So you got to force them into some pressure, and that's the only way we have a chance out on the tour. And obviously, as you know, Coach, being on a hard-court college tennis, I was just watching Baylor and Oklahoma play the other day, or it was at Texas A&M, and it was Baylor, Oklahoma. And there's guys coming in all the time. They're looking for that short ball and putting it down the line, and they're coming in. It's a hard court. It's a fast surface. These guys up at those schools are all 6'2", 6'3", and they can fly around. And, you know, you got to come in to win.
Well, and I'm going to get back to Lynn here in just a little bit, but this is interesting. Why is it that college coaches in America get this idea, but professional tennis players don't get this idea, Mike? Is it coaching?
Yeah, I think you get veteran coaches that know what wins at this level. And I think a professional coach, their guy gets passed two or three times, and they don't realize that attack tennis, you got to come in all the time.
Yeah,
you know, you can't
yeah.
come in selectively, and a guy passes once or twice. Of course, everyone's going to pass you right away. But if you come in 100 times, the first 10 you may pass you, but the next 90 you may win 65% of those. So, you know, it's just they're afraid to go down that rabbit hole and see what's on the other side. They're afraid to really commit to that. And that's okay. I mean, you know, that's the way they coach up at those levels. And that's it. They're afraid to come in because they think they're going to get passed.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And they also don't know how to temper their speed. They hit the ball so hard that there's no way to come in. How do you come in when you hit such a bomb? The next step you take, the ball's coming back. Right?
Yeah, right. Right.
So, you know,
very good. Well, Mike,
throw these...
you know that you've got a day in front of you of practice. What are you going to do today of practice out there?
You know, physical stuff, keep ourselves fit. We're always, every day we do volley overheads and working on serves and returns. So we're back to business. But thank you so much for taking the time with me and appreciate the show that you've been doing.
Yeah, Mike, I enjoyed having you on and finding out a lot about Lynn University, and I want to wish you the best professional.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, have a great day, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Perez. Mike is the head men's and women's coach out at Lynn University. Lynn, one of the most storied programs in Division II tennis. And just hope that I was able to give you a brief glimpse of that today along with Mike. It's hard to imagine that there are D2 programs out there that can beat these D1 programs, but Mike and his fellow top D2 programs are doing a great job of sending a message to the Division I programs that, you know, good tennis can be played at any division, and we'd just like to see more of that. So I want to thank him for coming on this week, and want to ask that you would join in next week to listen to another episode of the American College Experience. And if you can today, get outside and hit some tennis balls. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.